by Polycarp, who was taught by the Apostle John. So with each generation, the argument gets tougher to defend. Whatever the case, the key players in the Jesus family tomb. I really don't know how to pronounce the first name, so I'm going to try the best I can. And if you, you know, correct me on it later on, that's a good thing. I'll add it to the list with all the other hundreds of words I mispronounced. But Simcha Jakubowicz, something along those lines. He was a journalist. He was the key player in the Jesus Family Tomb movie. Charles Pellegrino, I could pronounce that name. It's a good Italian name. Now the Simcha guy is just a journalist, okay? He doesn't have any expertise in biblical archaeology. Charles Pellegrino, I think he also co-authored a book with him, forensic archaeologist. It means that he's an expert on like crime scene type investigation. He's not an expert on biblical archaeology. Things are a lot different when you're trying to find, you know, if you're trying to find Joe Schmo the suspect, you know, that's a lot different than trying to identify some Jesus son of Joseph with the biblical Jesus, a totally different thing. He's outside his field. James Cameron was film producer. He did the research for the documentary and produced the one on the Titanic where they found where the Titanic was. So he's done some pretty decent investigative work, but he's way out of his field here. Then they got James Tabor, a religion professor from University of North Carolina at Charlotte. I'm an unknown guy. If this guy wants to debate this issue tomorrow night, I'll debate it. He's not really. I mean, this guy. He just authored a book, The Jesus Dynasty. Okay, it's hot off the presses, and he argues that Jesus had this bloodline dynasty. It's kind of Dan Brown type stuff, except this guy is supposed to be a scholar. Okay, but he believes what he wants to believe, and yet he argues in that book, because he wrote the book before the Jesus Family Tomb was out in print, the film was made. He argues there that Jesus' tomb, if we ever find it, it'll be his family's tomb will be in Galilee. Don't look for it in Jerusalem. Well, the whole premise here is that the tomb is just outside Jerusalem, and so if anything, if this guy could claim any level of scholarship on his work on the quote-unquote Jesus dynasty, it's been discredited, because now they're claiming the tomb is found just outside Jerusalem. I mean, it amazes me how, let's say the people on this side of the room represented different scholars with different anti-Christian theories about Jesus. They all deny the biblical Jesus. If the people on this side come up with a new theory and it's real popular, as long as it slams the true Jesus of the Bible, people from this group will praise this position, even if it refutes their own position, okay? And so John Dominic Crossan was on the program, and he's a member of the Jesus Seminar. He has taught for decades that Jesus' body was thrown into a mass grave with criminals and eaten by wild animals. And I think among world's leading New Testament scholars, he's pretty much the only guy who holds that view. When he dies, that view will die with him. Dr. Gary Habermas, one of the leading experts on the historical evidence for Christ's resurrection, one of my former professors from Liberty University, last year in the same building, I talked to him about Crossan. He said, yeah, when Crossan dies, his theory is going to die with him. And because he's only got a couple disciples to follow him on that. Well, Crossan's acting like this Jesus family tomb is a big find. Well, if it's a big find, not only would it refute it, I mean, if it really is true, not only would it refute biblical Christianity, it would also refute John Dominic Crossan's work, the work of his life, trying to argue that there is no tomb of Jesus. Wild dogs ate him. Whatever the case, you look at the real biblical scholars, and they're rejecting these findings. Amos Cloner and Joe Zias are biblical archaeologists. They were members of the 1980 archaeology team that discovered the Talpiot tomb of 10 ossuaries, and they're very skeptical of the film's claims. The Talpiot tomb is the quote-unquote Jesus family tomb. It is not a new find. They found it back in 1980. Now, if they found it back in 1980, 27 years ago, how come it wasn't big news back then? Because it was biblical archaeologists working within their field. when they found it, they realized, oh, it's no big deal. I mean, they find an ossuary, Jesus, son of Joseph. That's not a big deal because you'd expect to find it. I mean, that would be like finding Tom, son of Bill, today. And even though there's, you know, billions of people today, and there weren't that many people back then, finding a tomb, Tom, son of Bill, I mean, there's lots of Bills that have sons named named Tom. And that's what they realized here. So they're very, very skeptical about it. They did not think, I mean, if these experts thought that this provided evidence for being the real Jesus family tomb, okay, they would have announced that in 1980 and they would have become famous. But they didn't because they realized that it was, you know, it was an important find, first century AD, ossuaries. By the way, let me explain an ossuary. First, this is pretty much just a few decades before Jesus to a few decades after Jesus, to about 70 AD, once Jerusalem was sacked by the Romans in 70 AD and the temple destroyed, they stopped doing the ossuary thing. But whatever the case, someone would die, you'd wrap them up in a shroud, okay, to keep the body from bending because of rigor mortis or you know, nerve endings doing weird things. You put them in a tomb, and then you'd wait about a year for all the flesh to rot away. Then you would take the bones apart and cleanse them, and then you'd put them in a small box called an ossuary, okay? The Jews had a tremendous respect for the corpses of, you know, deceased loved ones because of their belief in a future resurrection of the children of God. And the ossuaries had to only be long enough to hold the longest bone, the thigh bone, basically, okay? And so you would, and it was a way of saving space. So you could have a family tomb if you were wealthy. Only wealthy families even own tombs. You could end up, you know, you could have a couple ledges, maybe two or three ledges if you were real wealthy. So you could have three bodies, and as long as only three relatives died, you're during the same period, you're doing okay. And once their flesh rots, you clean the bones. Then you could start stacking, you know, 20 or 30. Ossuaries, if you had to, okay, and so that's pretty much what an ossuary was, and in the Talpiot tomb, Amos Cloner and Josias did not, being biblical archaeologists, they thought this is nothing unusual to find these kinds of names. In fact, no recognized biblical archaeologist accepts the film's claims. Okay, again, because this is, you know, well documented since 1980, and none of the world's leading biblical archaeologists said, oh, wow. Until you had guys who are looking for a story and aren't trained in biblical archaeology, and they turn a non-story into a story. Okay, William Deaver and Jonathan Reed were interviewed. They're biblical archaeologists. I believe one of the two, William Deaver, just came right out and said, look, I am not a believer. So he made it real clear. I'm not a Christian, okay? I could care less if they found Jesus' tomb, but this is not Jesus' tomb. You guys are making a mockery out of what we biblical archaeologists do. When Ted Koppel interviewed them right after the program aired, Jonathan Reed referred to the film as archaeoporn, and he was highly ticked off, and that these guys were making a mockery out of biblical archaeology. Now, all I could figure is what he meant by archaeoporn. What pornography does to true, healthy human sexuality, you know, marriage between one man and one woman, and pornography makes a total mockery of it and just perverts it and twists it. That's what he said these guys were doing, and then popularizes it. That's what these guys were doing with biblical archaeology. It was an embarrassment. And conservative New Testament scholars, and I'm not even talking about evangelicals necessarily, even just New Testament scholars who just fairly treat the New Testament without even presupposing that it's God's word, they come up with the conclusion that Jesus bodily rose from the dead. But you get evangelicals like Ben Witherington III, Darrell Bock. I'm sure N.T. Wright is probably just as opposed to this wild speculation as they would be as well. And so what we want to do right now is look at the inscriptions that are found on the 10 ossuaries. By the way, I'll draw a little, since I don't do PowerPoint or anything, I'll draw a little thing of what they kind of look like. They look something like that. They would be larger than that, unless the guy who died was as short as me. Then you wouldn't need too much room for that. And then there would be a lid on them, and sometimes they'll have an inscription right there, okay? Of course, if it's written in Hebrew, it's going to be written from right to left, okay? Well, they found 10 ossuaries in this tomb back in 1980, okay? Now, they're not there now. It's been excavated, so they're all in, like, storage. At least one of them is missing, okay? The rest of them are in storage. So whenever you see the guys on the film in the actual site and stuff, by the way, they did not get permission from the Israeli government to go there. And that's why it made them look like heroes when all these guys showed up with weapons but they had no permission. I mean, you just can't go to Israel and just start digging up property. I mean, you can't even do that in America. I mean, you know, but they made themselves look like real heroes and brave, courageous, going against the establishment. Look, bud, you don't just, you know, start digging up private and public property, okay? But these guys, when they went back to the tomb, the ossuaries have already been removed. They're doing that for effect, making themselves look like Indiana Jones types. In reality, the real research that they were doing, if you want to call it that, was when they were going into warehouses where the records are kept of the ossuaries, and then they got to maybe see a few of them and take pictures of them. But they've been removed as far back as 1980. But in there were 4 ossuaries with no inscription at all. Okay, so 4 out of the 10 right there. You know, and many ossuaries that we find right now, by the way, don't have inscriptions. So, you know, maybe the family members would remember where they were or whatever, or didn't have the time, or maybe just were not wealthy enough to put inscriptions on. But whatever the case, 4 of the ossuaries had no inscriptions. Now, as they catalog these, one is missing, okay? The guys in the Jesus family tomb, has everybody here heard of James, the son of Joseph, brother of Jesus? They found that ossuary, and that might be. Ben Witherington III really believes that belongs to James, the half-brother of Jesus. I'm not sure where I stand on that issue right now, but whatever the case, they're claiming the missing one, that was probably it, okay? No, these are the biblical archaeologists, Amos Cloner and Josias have gone record. That was not the missing one. They cataloged all of them, and the missing one had no inscription. So they try to add an argument for it, and they started saying the guy found it about 1980. No, he found it earlier than 1980. If he found it in 1980, it would belong to the Israeli government. It wouldn't be his property, okay? They have photos with them, and there are clear indicators that it's from the 1970s with that ossuary. So the missing ossuary has no inscription. That's not something you miss when you're a biblical archaeologist, okay? But believe me, let me tell you this. When I look at some pictures of ossuaries with inscriptions on them, I can't even see the inscription. I mean, to me, it looks like little chips in it. And these archaeologists, I mean, they break out the magnifying glasses, they go to town, and they study these things, and they read inscriptions that most of us are just like, well, I guess I got to accept your word on it because I don't see what you're talking about, okay? These guys don't miss anything, okay? They study these things very closely, and so whatever the case, the James, son of Joseph, brother of Jesus, ossuary was found before 1980. It has different dimensions than the dimensions cataloged for the one that is missing as well. They are 2 different ossuaries. So when these guys use that, see what they keep doing is they keep speculating, wild speculation, and then they treat that speculation as if it's gospel truth, and then they act like they're building a case. Well, we found this. This is added evidence. No, that's speculation. And this is added evidence. No, that's some more speculation. And this is added evidence. And so then when they go and they tell the statistics experts, we have all this evidence. The statistics experts do the math and come back, well, yeah, there's only a 1 in and, you know, 200 million chance that it's not Jesus of Nazareth, that's based on the presupposition that this is all evidence. When in reality, what it is, each one of these is a very light, unlikely hypothesis, okay? And so, actually, you're not really building a stronger and stronger case. It actually, I would think, it actually gets weaker as you go on, because you have all these unproven assumptions that have to be true rather than evidence, fact. And so whatever the case, so we'll talk more about the statistical experts, what they say about this documentary. So we want to focus on the six ossuaries with inscriptions. One says, Jesus, son of Joseph. And now there's a little bit of debate about whether it actually says Jesus, because it's hard to make out. Part of it's chipped away. But most biblical archaeologists would say it does say Jesus, son of Joseph. Another says Josie, which is a form of Jesus, which is a form of Joseph's name. It's like Joey, modern equivalent of Joey, okay? And Jesus had a brother named Josie. So Mark 6:3. You can look that up when you get a chance. There's Maria in Hebrew letters, which is one of the variations of Mary's name. Wow. Boy, we're really talking some heavy stuff here. But why in the world they would say Maria? It's in Hebrew's letters, but it's the Latin version of a Hebrew name. Instead of saying, you know, just coming right out and saying Mary, it's Maria. It's a Latinized version of it. And there's no evidence that Mary was ever referred to as Maria, except by the church later on, long after she was dead. There's a Mariamne, which is another version of the name of Mary. And Jesus had many female followers named Mary. I mean, you had Mary, the mother of Jesus. You had Mary Magdalene, and that's, they're going to try to argue that this is Mary Magdalene. Good luck. Don't hold your breath. You have another Mary who had a son named James and a son named Joseph, which were two of the names of Jesus' brothers. So, I mean, it was real common to find Marys out there. You had Mary, the sister of Lazarus. I mean, the list goes on and on. I mean, it's like every... I think Mary, or some variation of that name, made up about one of every four Jewish ladies in the Jerusalem area of that time. I would argue that that percentage might be higher if they were devout Jews, and probably only devout Jews are doing the ossuary thing. And then I would argue that that name might even become more common among Jews who become Christians, because now everybody wants to name their daughter after the mother of Jesus. And but whatever the case, we'll talk about the Mariamne in a little bit. Then there's a Mattia, which is a form of Matthew. Why in the world Matthew? They act like this is added evidence for the view. Why would Matthew, the author of the Gospel of Matthew, or, you know, we don't know of any other Matthew that Jesus knew. None of his brothers were named Matthew, but they act like this is added evidence it's Jesus' tomb because Jesus knew a Matthew. I mean, that'd be like, you know, can you imagine if they convicted you of a crime because you knew a Bill? I mean, everybody knows a Bill, okay? Everybody knows dozens of Bills. And then there's a Judah, son of Jesus. Judah, son of Jesus? All the evidence, all the early evidence indicates Jesus was never married and never had any children, but this is viewed as evidence that maybe the guys in the film, they actually speculate maybe the gospel writers would be embarrassed if Jesus had a son. So maybe Judah, the brother of Jesus, was really his son. I mean, that's some really weird speculation. I mean, see, what they're doing is they're getting biblical data, and from the biblical data, they're trying to prove that this is Jesus' tomb. But whenever they want, they could say, well, it says Judah was Jesus' brother, but what if he really was his son and they were lying? Well, then you're not really using biblical evidence. You're just changing it at will. I mean, you might, for all practical purposes, you might as well throw out the Bible, throw out all first century evidence, because their whole case is actually built on wild speculation. So we want to talk about some of the problems with identifying this tomb as Jesus' family tomb. If you get a chance, go to Gary Habermas's website, Ben Witherington III, Daryl Bach, who I mentioned earlier in the notes. The day after this came out, they gave you enough evidence to refute it. In fact, some of these guys were putting stuff on their website before it came out, explaining what some of the problems were because they were looking at the different stages of research. Okay, we already talked about the fact that James, the son of Joseph, brother of Jesus, is not the missing ossuary. Different dimensions, and the missing ossuary, whatever it is, or wherever it is, it has no inscription. So you can't use that as evidence for your view because there's no evidence that ossuary was ever in that tomb. Okay? There's no early evidence that Jesus was married or had children. All the early evidence indicates that Jesus was single. Okay? He was Jesus of Nazareth. Mary Magdalene means she wasn't married. When a lady got married, if Mary Magdalene married Jesus, her name would be Mary, wife of Jesus. Okay? But because she wasn't married, they call her Mary Magdalene. They named her after Magdala, the town she was from. You stopped calling ladies by the town they were from after they got married. Okay? Now, things get really confusing when you get a whole bunch of Marys together, because then they start saying, oh, man, how do we differentiate them? And they start saying, well, their sons were this name. You know, it goes on and on. But the fact of the matter is, Mary Magdalene was single. Okay? I'm sorry, Mr. Dan Brown, but, Dan Brown, by the way, Da Vinci Code, he's arguing that Mary was pregnant with Jesus' daughter, Sarah, when Jesus was crucified, and then Mary Magdalene moved to France to hide from the male chauvinist pigs, the apostles. Peter wanted to kill her because she was supposed to be the leader of the church. So he had a daughter named Sarah who intermarried with the French royal line. Go figure. But now all of a sudden these guys, they say nothing about Sarah. Now Jesus has got a son named Judah. Okay? Just all this wild speculation. Let me tell you, Mary Magdalene was one of the few ladies that supported Jesus' ministries, okay? We know from the scriptures that Jesus cast 7 demons out of her, okay? Nowhere does it say that she was young or attractive. Nowhere does it say that she was a former prostitute, okay? All that information, okay, there was Pope Gregory the Great. In the 6th century A.D., so again, 400 years after Jesus, 500 years after Jesus, he's preaching a message, and Gregory the Great wasn't so great on that day. He got confused, okay? The Bible's a big book. And he confused Mary Magdalene with Mary, the sister of Lazarus, who anointed Jesus' feet when Jesus was in Bethany en route to go to Jerusalem to be crucified. So he confused the two Marys. But then he confused that Mary, a very devout Jewish lady, with a prostitute who anointed, an unnamed prostitute who anointed Jesus' feet in the house, not of Lazarus, but the house of a Pharisee on an earlier occasion. So now you got 3 people morphed together, okay? And so that turns Mary Magdalene automatically into a young, attractive lady who was a former prostitute, okay? Then Mel Gibson makes his movie, God Bless Him, on the Passion of Christ, trying to get people to focus on Christ's sufferings and to see what he did for us, but probably to save money, so he didn't have to hire another actress. He also adds a 4th lady and morphs her into the woman caught in adultery. John chapter 8, 1 to 11, same actress. Save a lot of money by doing that, okay? But that's very confusing. Let me say this. It's my hypothesis. Let's see these guys refute this. I think my hypothesis has a greater factual ground for it, okay? I think she was an elderly lady. Number one, all the ladies she hung out with were elderly ladies. Number two, these ladies were traveling with Jesus and the apostles, and some of these guys were married, like Peter. Now, this is not, 21st century America, okay, where, you got Bill President, former President Bill Clinton kissing some Democratic lady and giving her a hug on TV because he's back in her campaign or this or that, and everybody's friendly with everybody else's wife. This is first century Jerusalem, okay? How is Jesus gonna gain and retain the respect of the Jewish religious community when him and his apostles are traveling with young ladies that are not their wives, okay? It's not going to happen. I can almost guarantee Mary Magdalene was probably an elderly lady whose father died, and she had inherited buku bucks, and she was helped supporting Jesus' ministry. But, I mean, the smallest scandal, I mean, Jesus was accused of being a party animal, a drunkard, just because he attended weddings and drank a little bit of watered-down wine with the other wedding guests. I mean, you read rabbinical literature, one part wine and three parts water was considered wine. One part wine and one part water, you're talking strong drink, and if you drink straight wine, you're considered a barbarian. I mean, so if you wanted to get drunk, you had to choose to get drunk back then, okay? Because they were watering this stuff down so much. But yet they call Jesus a drunkard, okay? And act like he's a big sinner because he would hang out with sinners because he would minister to sinners. So if there's any possibility of labeling him as being immoral, they would do it. And there's no evidence that his enemies did because he was not going around traveling with young ladies. And whatever the case, there's no evidence whatsoever Mary Magdalene. In fact, all the evidence, all the first century evidence, shows that Jesus was single, Mary Magdalene was single. The Judah son of Joseph ossuary shows that this is definitely a different Jesus. Whoever this Jesus was, he was married and he had a son named Judah. So it's not Jesus right there, okay? The DNA lab reported to Ted Koppel they don't agree with the conclusions of the film. Everybody said, you know, I even had a very, very close friend tell me, well, the DNA proved it was Jesus. Oh, like we got Jesus' DNA on file or something, you know? What? All the DNA evidence proved, you know, by the way, does everybody here understand there were no bones? In these, all they have was just like dirt and some human remains. I mean, but the bones are long. They could have been, I don't know if they were stolen or what, because bones don't just dissolve on you and all, but whatever the case, they didn't find any bones in there. I mean, there's some human remains, you know, the chemical composition. They compared the human remains from the Jesus, son of Joseph ossuary, with the Mariamne, and they found out that they're genetically not related. So that's supposed to prove, well, then therefore this is Jesus of Nazareth, and this is his wife, Mary Magdalene, and because they're not related, they have to be married. That's not the way DNA evidence is used in court. I mean, that's like saying the DNA evidence proved that it was not the DNA of the prosecuting attorney, nor was it the DNA of the defense attorney. Therefore, it must be the DNA of the suspect. I mean, it's just, all it showed was they're not related, whoever they are. But the DNA lab said, yeah, we just tested them and proved to them, yeah, this Jesus guy and this Mariam, they are not related. We didn't draw any of the wild conclusions that he drew or that the program drew. Okay, the statistician who gave all the stats and stuff also told Ted Koppel that he did not agree with the film's conclusions. Because what the statistician said, look, people will tell us, okay, here's a name, and one out of every four people had this name. And here's another name, and one out of every eight people had this name. And here's this other thing. And then whatever data they feed to them, okay, that's how they base their results on. But the guy, the experts there was basically saying, we would not make all the assumptions these guys were making before they gave us their quote-unquote data. So we would never draw the conclusion, you know, draw the conclusions that they drew. But if we accepted all their data, this is what the likelihood of it being Jesus' family tomb would be. But they said that, you know, you got those are big leaps, big assumptions. And, you know, they basically wanted to disassociate themselves from the conclusions because they're not conclusions they would draw. As I mentioned, Mary Magdalene was single. She was named after a town, which means she was single. The Acts of Philip is used as evidence because supposedly Mary Magdalene's mentioned there, and her name is pretty close to Mariamne. Well, it's not the exact thing. It's Mariamnon. I don't even know how to pronounce it. It's not the same. That's number one. Okay? It's a little bit closer than any other form of Mary that we know of. But whatever the case, in the Acts of Philip, the author claims to be either the Apostle Philip or the deacon of Acts chapter 8. Okay? Nobody, believers or non-believers that are scholars in the field, believes that this really was. In other words, the guy was lying. It's pseudepigrapha, false writings. Nobody believes Philip wrote this. It's a 4th century heretical document written about, 300 years after Jesus walked the earth. It's another one of those Gnostic writings. And he refers to this Mary, whoever she was, as his sister. Nowhere does he say it's Mary Magdalene. So they assume that this is credible, even though it's written 300 years later, by heretics, and that it's talking about Mary Magdalene, when nowhere does it even say it's Mary Magdalene. We don't even know which Philip this author is claiming to be, but we know whichever author he's claiming to be, he's not one of those two Philips. It's a guy hundreds of years later pretending to be and lying through his teeth, or lying through his pen, I should say. Whatever the case, even if he was calling her Mary Magdalene, equating them, this is not early evidence. The New Testament has first century documents. We have ancient creeds. We have all sorts of first century evidence for Jesus' resurrection. These guys are really reaching for it when you go hundreds of years into the, you know, beyond Jesus to try to grab at straws and find evidence there. By the way, the Mariamne inscription is in Greek. It's not in Hebrew or Aramaic. So whoever this Mary was, she probably had more Greek influence on her than Jewish, or at least had as much Greek influence on her. I mean, they didn't even write the name in Hebrew. They wrote it in Greek. See, we don't even know the full practices of tombs with ossuaries. Do you just bunch together? You know, I mean, if somebody walks up to you and says, I've got my my dad's bones in an ossuary and we can't afford a family tomb, can we keep his ossuary in your tomb? I mean, we just don't know what the practices are. We do know that there have been times when it appears that servants were added who weren't even parts of members of families that appear to be in ossuaries. So just the fact that this Mariamne is not related to the Jesus guy could be a servant. Her name's in Greek. It's not even in Hebrew or Aramaic. There's also a very large Greek inscription inside the tomb. The more we talk about this, the less it sounds like Jesus and his family. Okay? Jesus was as Jewish gets. By the way, this is not the first Jesus, son of Joseph, ossuary found. Another one was found in 1926, and it was not thought to be unusual. I mean, you know, what these guys want us to think, oh, it's a big conspiracy protecting Christianity. Let me tell you, there is no conspiracy protecting Christianity. Whenever there's millions of dollars floating around, it's always used to try to attack biblical Christianity. I mean, the idea that there's all these biblical archaeologists in the Jerusalem area that are trying to hide secrets to protect Christianity, most of these guys, you know, are not Christians. They're Jewish. If they're going to be biased in one direction or another, they would love to prove Jesus didn't rise from the dead, but that's not what they're doing. They're going where the evidence points, and the evidence points, this is not the same Jesus as the Jesus of the Bible. Okay, I mean, we have, let's face it, a New Testament scholar, an Orthodox rabbi, Rabbi Lapid, not Rabbi Lapin from up here, but Rabbi Lapid, he acknowledges that Jesus, the evidence indicates that Jesus of Nazareth rose from the dead. He's reached the point where he acknowledges that Jesus is the greatest Jewish prophet who ever lived. He doesn't want to accept Jesus as Messiah, but he believes the apostles totally misunderstood his message. Now, why would God waste the greatest Jewish prophet ever on a bunch of numbskulls who would misunderstand his message? I don't know. But Lapid is going so far to say he's willing to acknowledge Jesus as the Gentile Messiah, the Messiah for the Gentiles. Well, there's no biblical evidence for a Gentile. There's a Jewish Messiah, period. But it's amazing that the Jewish scholars started by saying Jesus was a demon-possessed sorcerer. Now they're saying he was possibly the greatest Jewish prophet who ever lived. We've come a long way, baby, and it's not Jesus family tomb stuff. But there's no real conspiracy trying to protect the Jesus of the Bible. They're just going where the evidence leads, and the evidence indicates that you just give up trying to find Jesus of Nazareth's tomb. Well, by the way, I think we have his tomb. There's two possibilities, but the one I favor is the Church of the Holy Sepulchre, even though they built this great monuments on top of it, so you got to really use your imagination. But in 135 AD, and it had been going on for decades before that, Christians used to go to the site as the tomb of Jesus. And then Emperor Hadrian built a pagan altar on top of that. Well, the mother of Emperor Constantine, when she converted to Christianity, she went back there knowing that in 135 AD, 200 years earlier, a pagan altar was built on Jesus's empty tomb. She demolished it and began to build the Church of the Holy Sepulchre on there. But whatever the case, it's an empty tomb. Okay? And that's where the evidence points if you're really looking for Jesus' tomb. There may also have been several other Jesus, son of Joseph, ossuaries found. Dr. Habermas talks about that. There's a question about, you know, some of these inscriptions are very hard to read. By the way, all the names in the tomb were very common in the first century AD circles, maybe even more common in Jewish Christian homes. I mean, look at my 20th century Roman Catholic family. I'm no longer Roman Catholic, but we've got you got 300 Fernandezes, 200 Restainos and Minichinos all back in Jersey. But if you just take, you know, my closest family members, like out of the top 20, we've got 3 Josephs, 3 Marys, 4 Peters, 1 Philip, and 1 Mark. Okay? You know, what does that mean? Maybe did we find Peter's tomb or what? No, this is 2,000 years later, okay? We even got 3 Roccos. I don't know where, I can't figure where Rocco and Vinny fit into this, but whatever the case, the name Jesus is found 99 ancient tombs and on 22 ossuaries. That's why biblical archaeologists say, oh, Jesus, son of Joseph, no big deal. Because everybody's Joseph. Everybody's Jesus. Everybody's James. Joseph appears on 45 ancient ossuaries. And, you know, look at all the Josephs in the Gospels and Acts. You realize that when a guy's name was Joseph, they probably didn't even call him Joseph anymore. Barnabas, son of encouragement, his name was Joseph. If they called him Joseph, you say, hey, Joseph, 50 guys turn around. So it's like, but Barnabas, okay? Caiaphas, the high priest, he had a son named Joseph, but he was probably also named Joseph as well. So you just kind of call him by a different name because there's so many Josephs. 45 ancient ossuaries with Joseph that they found. Mary's the most common ancient female name. Just look at the Gospels and count all the Marys. It will make your head spin, okay? James, Judah, Matthew were also common Jewish names. By the way, the early followers of Jesus never call him Jesus, son of Joseph. The only time he's called Jesus, son of Joseph, are by the enemies of Christ or one or two of the apostles when they first met him. Well, isn't this Jesus, son of Joseph? But once they became his follower, they found out about the virgin birth. They would never call him Jesus, son of Joseph. Okay? It would be Jesus, son of Mary. Or, because, you know, because of the virgin birth and all, you know, or Jesus of Nazareth. Or the earliest title of Jesus that was used over and over again was the Lord Jesus Christ. You'll never find that on an ossuary. Because if he needed an ossuary, if his bones were still with us, they wouldn't call him the Lord Jesus Christ. They wouldn't call him Yahweh or Christ, which means Messiah. Okay? Dead Messiah means dead Messiah movement. Jesus died. His Messiah movement keeps going forward. That means he's alive. He rose from the dead. Jesus' family tomb would probably be in Galilee if one existed, assuming they had enough money for it. The Talpiot tomb belonged to wealthy, possibly Hellenistic, Greek-speaking Jews. Jesus' family was poor. John 19, I'm just wrapping it up now, but John 19, 26, Jesus was speaking to his mother and John the Apostle. These guys twist everything, and they try to make it Jesus is speaking to Mary Magdalene and Judah, his son. The way these guys handle John chapter 19 is the way they handle archaeological evidence, and it's the way they handle ancient text, okay? This is fairy tale stuff. That's why it was titled by the one biblical archaeologist, Archaeoporn. And we should not expect to find Matthew. What is Matthew doing in Jesus' tomb? That's an argument against it being in Jesus' tomb, not an argument for it, okay? So my closing statement is this, and we're not going to have a chance to talk about this, but Gary Habermas does a great job on this. You can go to my website, biblicaldefense.org. We've got over 1,000 of my lectures, debates, sermons. Just look for anything that I did on the historical Jesus or evidence for Christ's resurrection, and you'll be able to look into this. But my final point is this. While the film's producers accept vague 4th century quote-unquote evidence, it's not even evidence when you look at it, but while the film producers accept vague 4th century supposed evidence found in heretical writings, they ignore all the 1st century AD evidence for the resurrection, which is accepted by the vast majority of New Testament scholars. You realize that Dr. Gary Habermas has shown he's read everything produced from 1975 to the present day, written in English, French, and German, by the world's leading New Testament scholars, and over 70% of them believe that Jesus of Nazareth rose from the dead in some way, shape, or form. Over 70% believe that the tomb was empty. Okay, the list of all these other things, virtually all New Testament scholars acknowledge them. The conversion and transformation of both Paul and James, because they believe they had seen Jesus risen from the dead. The early preaching of the resurrection in Jerusalem, which is the easiest place to refute it. The empty tomb, and that it was Joseph Arimathea's tomb, who was a member of the Sanhedrin, and the tomb was found empty by woman. A woman's testimony didn't hold up in a court of law. No reason for the apostles to make that up. The day of worship changed from Saturday to Sunday by Orthodox Jews, when that was to celebrate the Sabbath day, celebrate God's work of creation. Well, there had to be some event as big as or bigger than creation for Orthodox Jews to change it. Jesus rose from the dead on Sunday, and most, if not all, of his post-resurrection appearances were on Sunday. The apostles got the hint. Okay? The ancient creed found in 1 Corinthians 15, 3-8. Nobody wants to call Paul a liar. He's writing in the mid-50s A.D. Probably got the creed in the ancient 30s A.D. from Peter and James when he visited them. Talks about that in Galatians 1. And it talks about Jesus appearing to over 500 people at one time, appearing to Peter, who's called Cephas, in his Aramaic name, and then Jesus appearing on numerous occasions to Paul. The experiences of the apostles and others, they believe they saw the risen Christ numerous times. No debate about that among New Testament scholars. Even most of the Jesus seminar will admit that the apostles had some kind of experiences where they really thought, sincerely believed, they saw Jesus risen from the dead. The founders of the early church sincerely believed they saw Jesus risen from the dead. Men do not die for what they know to be a hoax. Nobody wants to call them liars. Okay? First century Jewish thought, the word resurrection always meant the bodily resurrection, and everybody agrees. Paul taught that Jesus rose from the dead as early as the 50s AD, and Paul claimed it was not anything new. So all the first century evidence, even outside the Bible, declares that Jesus rose from the dead. You've got this wealth of evidence that Jesus' tomb, wherever it is, it's empty against all this wild fly-by-night speculation. And it just amazes me that God could use Ted Koppel, of all people, to shut this wild speculation down immediately after the program aired. And so I kind of almost wondered why Carl wanted me to speak on it. But the fact of the matter is this theory is dead in the water. And but whatever the case, I can promise you this, there'll be another one tomorrow, another wild theory after that. But when everything's said and done, with all this wild speculation, Jesus is still the risen Savior. He's still the God of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. Jesus is still Jesus, and those who reject him, you know, it's irrelevant what they say. Jesus is still sitting on a throne, and someday he'll take a stand upon the earth. God bless you. Thanks for your patience. If you want to look more into this, just go to our website. We've got a wealth of information there.